handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
To another episode of the Righteous Work Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan, and that is Cookie clickety-clacketing. As soon as I start speaking, she comes and runs over and says, hello, what's going on? And then she leaves. Hello, it is 12:44 p.m. East Coast time on October 26th in the year of our Lord 2020. Lunch break, Monday lunch break means Righteous Prick Podcast recording. Just sitting here doing my legal work. Just a few things to announce before we get into my gripes and complaints. I wrote a blog yesterday I've spoken to this if you're a new listener, the signed headshot that the actor Bob Gunton, best known as the warden in Shawshank, sent to my uncle. So it's a story about all that. If you've been listening all year, then you know the story, but this was put more into a concise narrative. So that's up on my page right now. New website coming from me this weekend. My website guy has redesigned my website, so it's going to be a little sleeker. Still content jammed, but a much sleeker presentation. A little slimmed down, but I know some people have suggested to me really trimming it down, and I said, you know what, I'm not one of those people who thinks that a website just needs to be go to my social media. And I know that's what we are, but I've written too much. I produce too much that I still want my fans to be a little more old school and more comprehensive in what they get from me and what they seek out from me. So writing, videos, podcasts, store, the whole thing will be there. I looked at Dane Cook's website. He was sort of the pioneer in terms of at the peak of his career, or not even at the peak of his career, entering the peak of his career. His websites were always just super slick and ahead of the time. And now I looked at his website out of curiosity, and it's like pared down to like a piece of shit. And I think that's a stylistic choice. I'm sure the tastemakers and the design people have all said, yeah, people really want to follow you on social media now, and they don't really need all your bells, whistles, content. They're just going to follow you on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, you know, and they're going to find you on YouTube. And I just still like having a website home. I like to buck that trend, which is, you know, been the nature of my entire career, I guess. Where, you know, the people who've been following me for a long time expect me to write stuff. They expect to find, fun stuff and constantly updating material. So I like to have my website be, a place people might want to visit once a week, not just once they discover me and that's it. So new website coming, same address, same everything, but I'll obviously be pushing that whenever the new site actually gets launched. But I'm assuming, you know, maybe we'll do it November 2nd. Maybe November 2nd will be a good day to launch, the day before the election. But I don't know yet when it'll be officially done, but it's going to be nice. and hopefully that will be a great place for people to visit whenever I can start putting out a new special or album and or touring. They'll have a fresh, newer looking website for J.O. Covan. Right now, my website is sort of Craigslisty in comparison, because it's just, you know, I joked with some people earlier this year that suggested I get a new website, and I said, no, I agree, because my old website is basically a comic who's accomplished a lot but isn't being paid attention to, basically screaming to the world, look at all I have done, motherfuckers. Look at my credits. Look at my videos. Look at this. Look at all my writings. I've done so much. Why the fuck are you ignoring this boatload of talent and this treasure chest of content? Whereas now more people know who I am, so this is just for those fans. You know, hopefully a sizable portion of the following I have online will become stand-up fans and want to engage with this. You know, one of the things that my new fan base, which, you know, obviously dwarfs my old fan base in terms of size, but, you know, some of the best stuff I wrote on a regular basis, not sort of big talk on the economics of comedy or politics or humorous things on whatever, but were, you know, the regular things were the road recaps, which I took great pride and pleasure in writing, because I felt like those were funny ways to push my content, but also, you know, to share the experience of a middle act on the road. And hopefully those days are behind me. I have no idea if they are. I can tell you they are, because I will no longer go feature for the standard rate of 1988 wages. So I guess my day, you know, yes, I'd open for a huge act to tour with, but that's different than just going to the Toledo Funny Bone for $600, six shows, and making $300 profit. Like, I will now headline those rooms or stay home. It's not what I love performing, but I, you know, my value is no longer that of a feature act. My talent, my material and talent have been past that for several years, but now I have the following that I have to just hopefully headline. And maybe that'll be a more conventional experience that people hear about and think about. But for a decade, I basically just chronicled my road gigs in a funny, honest way, from the transportation to the accommodations to the fans, and trying to share one or two clips from each weekend. So I don't know how to really get you to scroll through that other than just going through my website over a day and just going, or you know, road comedy recap. Let's just look for all the road comedy recaps and scroll through. But it'd be nice to share that again, and have new adventures and new experiences on the road. So that's usually where the blog came in most handy, other than the occasional piece that would go viral for whatever reason. The road recaps are what I miss. So, you know, it's one component of the road. That's usually what I would do. I would either write it on the train ride home or when I got home, or sometimes if I had one Sunday show, I'd be like, well, something crazy probably won't happen at the Sunday show, and I'd write it beforehand. But hopefully when I bring a bunch of stand-up comedy fans, they'll realize that it's another holistic approach to comedy. You'll either see me live, or you'll get to see some clips of me, or you'll get to just read about the recap, like my own comedy journalist, covering myself. So the new website will be very nice, and I'm looking forward to launching that. Nothing like insanely different, but just a cleaner, tighter look to it. Joe Biden might call it the first time JL's had a clean, articulate website. Vote for Joe, by the way, if you haven't voted for Joe. I got into it on Instagram with somebody. I posted a clip, and that's the other thing I've been trying to do, is post stand-up clip once a week, stand-up Saturday or stand-up Sunday, just to remind people that, like, you know, the Trump thing is great that you discovered me, and I've obviously put out a fucking ocean's worth of Trump-related content this year, but you know what? I treat it, and I think I've said this before, because I got, I guess we'll get into the complaints here early on. But somebody, there was a Vice magazine covered this guy who did a Trump impression. I think I may have referenced him last weekend. And the first time he put out a video, I thought the impression actually sucked. I'm not saying that as a hater. I was like, why are people, this is not good. His next video was much better. Like, I think I said last week, I'd say it went from like a D+ to a B+. So now that's a solid impression. So of course, Vice, who I guess hasn't heard of me and didn't cover me at all in the last 6 months. I mean, the LA Times, the Washington Post did, Mark Maron did, but you know, whatever. Vice, we interviewed the hands down best Trump impersonator on the planet. I was like, I guess you got to title it that way, but it's sort of weird. You know, I guess you're just trying to carve out some other niche or set up, you know, rival teams. But a fan of mine wrote, he's good, but the best, please. J.L. Covan is like overwhelmingly better than this guy. And I laughed because then a couple of comments after, some guy went wrong. And I was like, okay, you can have your favorite and that's fine. But then the next guy said, referencing the article subject, this guy just walks around talking about whatever he meant it as a compliment, like he's just riffing and showing off. Whereas this other guy, it's his whole act and he's not even good, meaning me. Now, I simply blocked those people because, you know, I don't throw jabs when I feel like my work is being insulted. You know, I try to break your skull open metaphorically. But what bothered me about that, I guess, which is why I had to block it, because I would have probably come off whiny. And I was like, who is this person? This woman with 23 followers is not worth my time. But the thing that bothers me more, it's like, if you don't think my impression's good, so be it. Like, I genuinely don't care on that level, because it's like, well, I have, you know, 100,000 plus people who think it's really good and are willing to support a podcast or to engage in any number of comedy things I put out. So that's, who cares if other people don't think it's good? But what bothers me is, and it only happens with comedy, it seems, it's like, I made this comparison before. It's like when Breaking Bad was ending, nobody said to Bryan Cranston or Tony Soprano with The Sopranos, what the hell are you going to do when this is done? This is like the only thing you've ever done. This is the only good. No, people are like, oh, well, you're a talented actor, so you'll find new movies and new shows and new roles. Like, I look forward to that. I'll miss the show, but I see the talent. You know, when somebody has a one-hit wonder in music, you know, you can always mock them as a one-hit wonder, but it's kind of a badge of honor. It's like music is treated differently. It's like the guy who, the lead singer of The Outfield, who sang the song Your Love, which is one of my favorite songs ever, a tremendous 80s one-hit wonder, passed away, and it was just sort of universal praise. Nobody's going, well, you didn't do shit after Your Love. People are just like, oh yeah, and maybe they have other hits, but trust me, that's the only one I know, and I'm not a music expert, but I feel like I think they are a one-hit wonder. But nobody kind of goes, well, he couldn't do anything besides that. People are just like, that's awesome that he had that hit. He had that earworm 80s classic that we still listen to today. When a writer writes one book, what was her name? Kill a Mockingbird. It took her like 60 years and like bullying by her relatives to come out with a sequel that nobody liked. She basically just had to kill a mockingbird. Nobody was like, well, she only wrote one book. People were like, that book is a fucking classic that sold 800 billion copies because every kid in school reads it. And, you know, you just sort of, people seem to appreciate good art and not always treat it as a weapon. But what I find is, and I'm a relatively smart guy, I'm an educated guy, I have a lot to offer in terms of comedy and not comedy, and I've done a lot of different things within comedy. But the favorite insult, apparently, which I see hurled at comedians, is like, me in particular, is, oh, well, this is his whole act. And it's like, well, I do have, just because somehow in comedy, when you discover a comedian for something, if you want to insult them, you act like their career begins and ends with the one thing you discovered them for. Now, I know it's the thing I'm most famous for, but at some point you have to just be like, well, that's okay to have something that's your biggest thing. Not everything is your greatest hit, because if you're ranking things, something has to, and it's undeniable that my Trump impression, which I think is excellent, and if as much as the voice is strong, the content and ad-libbing, that's why I found it so funny, the guy comparing me, like, as if I'm crafting like speeches and writing out this Trump material. I have literally done, between the podcast and the videos in the last 6 months, probably close to 70 hours of Trump content. Now, that sounds disgusting and awful, and it is, but none of that's scripted. From the podcast to the videos, none of it is scripted. And Sean McCarthy, who covers comedy, he was nice enough on this when this guy's video was going viral. He was like, clearly this guy's been influenced by J.L. Covan, because he's following the J.L. Covan like rule book, And I didn't say he's ripping me off. I took that as a compliment that somebody else recognized that I had been paving this path in a much bigger and more original way. But it's funny that people have to first attack you as like, this is your only thing. It's somehow that only gets attributed to comics, it feels like, or at least in my experience, where it's like, great, your 15 minutes are almost up, dude. I'm like, why is that? Is everybody's 15 minutes up just because the thing they're most famous for stops? Do people not get to appreciate? Like, what I want people to realize is behind the content, the Trump is obviously an active comedic mind, a quick wit, and somebody who brings a lot more to the table. You know, it's like Chris Rock, Bring the Pain, is his best special, in my opinion. Does anybody go up to him and go, well, you never reached Bring the Pain status again? No, because he made other great specials, but it's okay to have your something be your best one. But the insult is always to say, oh, well, you've accomplished something or you've become famous or something. The way I'll diminish you is to pretend like you have nothing else to offer. Like weaponizing the success of one thing as a hammer to destroy anything else you might do, which is weird because obviously I'm an accomplished stand-up comedian. Certainly a prolific one, if not very, I'm not very accomplished, but I am prolific and I have, you know, some accomplishments to my name. But I don't know. It's always a weird thing. And then I just think people are stupid. I really do. I do think people are stupid on the whole. This week I said something about Glengarry. I quoted Glengarry Glenn Ross because somebody said, so great that Sarah Cooper and J.L. Covan like brightened our years. And I quote tweeted that and said, first prize is a Cadillac, second prize is a set of steak knives. Very famous from the Glengarry Glenn Ross movie script. Very famous. It's the scene, people who haven't seen the movie have seen that scene 10 times, the Alec Baldwin monologue. And a guy goes, David Mamet wants his dialogue back. And there is nothing I love kicking in the teeth, metaphorically, more than a dummy who tries to flex intellectually. Like, I commented back, oh, I thought I made up that line myself. And he said, and as is typical of the comments I get, mostly the anti-comments are often progressives who think they're allies. And his comment was like, I just thought if we're not repugs, meaning like Republicans, but repugnant, if we're not repugs, we give credit where it's due. And I wrote back, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you either know that line because it's famous, or you have no idea what I'm talking about and don't think what I said made any sense. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you see somebody go, first prize is a Cadillac, second prize is a set of steak knives, and you don't know Glengarry Glenn Ross at all, that makes no sense to you. It's not like you're going, God, that guy, those are bars. Do you mind if I use that nonsensical two-line quote in my yearbook because it's so profound? No, you'd be like, I don't know what that means. And if you do know what it means, it's like, you're like, oh, clearly you're cut. And I said to him, so if I say make him an offer he can't refuse, I've got a quote tweet, attribute that to Mario Puzo and or The Godfather. He goes, in my opinion, The Godfather is much more well-known than Glengarry Glenn Ross. And I was like, yes, it is. But in my sphere, I'm done walking people through jokes. Like, the only time I explain jokes and then people miss this is when I explain a joke, this is for all you friends and fans listening to Righteous Brick. If you see me on Twitter explaining a joke, that's me shaming people. That's not me actually explaining the joke. Like, that's not me helping people. That's me shaming people because, of course, explaining the joke is lame. So that's me shaming people who have to comment or don't get the material. Like, I'm not here. Like, we're done hand-holding people who've never been to a comedy show, never watched stand-up comedy. I'm done hand-holding them and explaining to them how comedy works. Just because you're on the internet and you like cat memes or you like funny voices doesn't mean you know what the fuck you're talking about in comedy. So, and that'll bring us, that'll segue us nicely into Not Afraid of Burning in Hell, the Ron Reagan Jr. section. I did see a clip of Ron Reagan and Nancy Reagan at Ronald Reagan's funeral. I think part of that First Ladies series on CNN. But seeing a young Ron Reagan standing over the grave of his father, all I could think was, not afraid of burning in hell. but yeah, so I'm done. Like, but it's a weird thing that people, when you have success in comedy, just like the same on the flip side of that is the people who will say to me, "You, why don't you stick to comedy, funny boy," or something like that. And it's always like, no, don't worry, MAGA dude. I'm also much more educated than you, much more well-read than you, and much smarter than you. I know, and that's the other way. People use comedy. They wouldn't say that if I wrote one hit book. If I wrote like a Pulitzer Prize winning book and that's all I had, they wouldn't be like, okay, writer, you one book wonder. No, they'd be like, well, this guy is a scholar. But for some reason, when you do something really funny that blows up, they want to, like I said, weaponize it into making you only that. So it's like a lot of time I think there's jealousy that you blew up. So then they have to sort of weaponize it and go, well, I may not have anything good, but you know what? You only have one good thing, and I'm going to make you seem like a lucky turd instead of somebody with talent. And that's the flip side is when you say something thoughtful or interesting or intelligent that they don't agree with because they suck at the teat of Donald Trump. They go, stick to comedy, okay? And it's like, why? Why? I have more valuable insight and opinion than you on many matters. Just because I'm better than you at lots of things doesn't mean I only have to do the one thing that I'm really better than you at by a large margin. I'm better than you at many things, sir. So why don't you shut the fuck up and stick to being stupid and sit in the corner with a dunce cap on? So that's how I feel about the people that attack me and the people that try to diminish my... But that bothers me so much because it just shows such a disrespect and disregard for comedy and stand-up comedians that, like, none of that work matters to people. And I'm learning that stand-up comedy doesn't matter to people. Tomorrow, I'm sure to get a lot of tweets. That's going to be fun. As of this recording, you may not listen to this until Tuesday, but as of this recording, we're one day away from Sarah Cooper's Netflix special, which by my count has at least like six A-listers and several B-listers rounding out the cast. Sort of the opposite of Nas's first album, as he bragged. First album, no guest lyricists. Apparently this special is all guest lyricists, more like a Timbaland album than a Illmatic. But my first special, which will air on, you know, HBO less than max 9 years from now, will be a real Illmatic of comedy if we still do stand-up comedy by then and we're not just doing fart sounds on TikTok. But another thing that, and this happened literally after I recorded last week, so we can go and attack some more fans. And these are all people I block. Like, my tolerance has plummeted for people who don't respect stand-up comedy or compare me to things I don't respect. But I had a 5-tweet thread, and we're keeping this in the family, guys, because I know only my hardcore fans like Righteous Prick. But I had a 5-tweet thread ready to go that's still in my drafts, holstered. But I did a video as Don Trump Jr. last week. An impression video. Maybe this was Tuesday. This might have been Tuesday. I don't even remember. All the days blur together. But I did an impression of Don Trump copying him. It was my second video impersonating Don Trump Jr., but this one was a lot better. For some reason, just like my Donald Trump impression is better as the day goes on, as my voice gets worn out. Just like the Sherrod Brown impression, which, by the way, that's another thing. Sherrod Brown's wife retweeted my Sherrod Brown impression during the Democratic convention. And nobody cares. Nobody cares that just, you know, I have candidate spouses retweeting my bars. But I did Don Trump. And for some reason, early in the morning, I felt like the voice was much closer than I could get it at other times in the day. So I said, let me do this. So I just wrapped up a blanket, put on a hat, and did a quick ad lib of the video of his that was going viral because it looked so stupid. So I post that at 9:05 a.m. At 9:54 a.m., Queen C posts her video, a 15-second. Mine was 20 seconds because I actually added something to it and was doing it myself. She added a 14-second lip sync video, which, of course, got, at last count, like 2.3 million views or something. And I looked at that and I said, huh, that's weird because she follows me. And I wonder, maybe not. That could be a coincidence. I'm totally okay with that being a coincidence. But of course, then later in the day, we're both written up in the Huffington Post together. She gets the lead, and I get literally the also inspired by Don Jr. was comedian J.O. Covan, and they post mine. And I was just like, that's where the fuck we're at. I know she's got more followers and she's a bigger name, but I did an original impersonation and I did it first. Once again, this is the fucking deja vu of deja vus. And yet I know people are going for clickbait, but it's like we couldn't even share the headline. Like being first and being original usually were like two of the most important things in art. You know, first and original usually trumped middle school talent show lip sync with not first. So when I saw that, I posted, somebody said, it's so cool that you guys had the same idea. And I wrote back, is it? Mine was first and mine's original. But I look forward to being called a thief later today, which is, you know, sort of the story of what should have been a glorious summer for me, was sort of the story of my Trump impression this summer. And the person was like, well, it's parallel thinking, you know, and then I wrote, that's, you know, once again, nobody respects stand-up, but I have the equivalent of like an MD PhD in comedy. That's okay. Like, I do. I know we don't treat it the same way or as important as other arts, but I am so fucking deep in comedy in terms of writing, my improv skills, my stand-up experience, the volume I've put out, the way my mind has sort of been trained to think comedically now. I've sort of put my brain power over the last 15 years of my life focused like a laser on being funny versus being maybe a good lawyer or whatever. So I don't like people explaining to me or having the audacity to explain comedy to me. And I was like, I don't need you to explain comedy to me. And that was the only nasty thing I said. But I said one other thing, but that was the only thing that had like a nasty tone to it. But then that person said something, and then another person said, not uncalled for. And then I went at these two people who were, you know, my least favorite kind of fans. They were the fans that are equating what I do with what Sarah Cooper does. And I hate that. To me, it's often that you are not fans that are going to help my dreams come true. And I know that sounds maybe callous or whatever, but there's fans that can, you can like both, but the fans that equate what we do are not going to be the fans that propel me to where I want to go. They're not going to be the fans who maybe buy the albums or buy the tickets because they are equating easily accessible, easily replicated comedic gimmicks with what I do, which is not that. And, you know, somebody, and then I said, I basically was like told one of them, like after they got with me, I said, you know, then it got hostile. And then somebody else said, it's a shame. I've supported him by getting cameos for relatives. Oh, well. And they both unfollowed me. And I wrote back and I was like, I was just like, for real, fuck off. And for you to act like us having a business transaction where I produce an original idea for a gift for you somehow entitles you to talk shit or be like an authority on comedy. No, our exchange ended when I gave you what you paid for and delivered the goods as usual. That's why I have fucking 906 cameos in 6.5 months because people who get them come back or get their friends to get because I fucking deliver the goods. But my point with that was I don't like being equated to shit I don't respect. And then I don't like being lectured on comedy from people who have not been in the trenches and do not know this game 1/100th as well as I do and have, you know, sacrificed in this game. But what bothered me about the Cooper thing was not that that was necessarily theft, but it was not the first time I had seen my shit stolen. Possibly, allegedly. At the end of August, I did a series of videos for the RNC as Trump, not for them, but about, you know, after the each night of the RNC. And each night, Donald Trump Sr. had a little bit of white powder on the first night under his nose, a lot more the second. And then by the last night of the convention, I was doing a speech and that video got like 80,000 views on YouTube and I think like 100,000 on Twitter, where like my whole face was basically in powder and it was like on my coat. So in other words, it just looked like each night he needed more Adderall or cocaine to get through the night. It was just a stupid sight gag, but it gave people sort of, it gave it a like a linear history throughout the week. Like you could track it. A little bit of a long form joke over the course of the week to link the four videos. So a month later, of course, a video called How to Drugs comes out on Cooper's page. It's literally 30, I want to say like 33 days, 34 days after I had posted the final video of that series. And like I said, they got some decent views. And she then used the exact same gimmick in her video. Like every time you turn back to her, she has more powder until it was like, you know, all through her hair. Like she went to an extreme. But in my head, I go, huh. Now that my video has, you know, 100K. Hers has 3.3 million. And nobody cares. Nobody sees the similarity. Nobody remembers the similarity. Interesting. Now, they seem to always remember her when my videos go up because for 4 months straight, I would get attacked by probably at this point 70 to 100 fans of hers. Now, admittedly, of a huge number. But I wasn't copying her, and they were very quick. Comedy ignorant people, which abound, were very quick with accusations of me stealing. Me first, me original, but me stealing. On this, between the Don Jr. and the Coke joke, I now have two examples of her following me with an eerily similar idea. I'm less inclined to think the Don Jr. thing was theft, but once is a coincidence, twice is a pattern. Is that, I don't even know if that's a phrase. But what's also interesting, and this was what my tweet thread was, because what bothered me was like my quote-unquote fans were getting on me for suggesting that I'd been stolen from. So in other words, her fans get on me erroneously for stealing from her. I suggest something that many stand-up comedians whose opinions seem to be more and more marginalized in the world of comedy would, of course, think was I have a prima facie case. Okay, I could get it through a grand jury that I had, maybe not a courtroom conviction, but I could probably get an indictment of comedy theft based on those two examples. And then if you look at the dates of her first TikTok video, the day before her TikTok video, I believe, a white woman, and I don't know her name, but posted a video, which is really funny, just like Coop's first, posted a video of her drunk at a club doing Trump's dialogue, and it's very well acted out, very well lip-synced. She's like in a dark room with like a strobe light, and she's pretending to drink, like she's drunk, and she's delivering a Trump monologue, and that got over 1 million views, and that went up the day before the first video of Everybody's Hero. And I look at that, and I just see the pattern, and I've complained about this on the show a few weeks ago. It was called, and it wasn't directed at anybody in particular, it was more directed at TikTok in general. But it was a general sort of thought of copying is now more acceptable than it ever has been. And creation is sort of just a choice. Like now with your art in the comedy space, especially with TikTok, you can choose to be creative. That's an option. But you don't have to. Sometimes you just copy exactly what everybody else did just to get likes. And that's okay. Because that's now one of the mainstream ways of creating content. And I think to myself, I go, so in other words, I have a woman who went viral, not to the same degree, who put out a really funny video the day before someone else was inspired to do their own lip sync idea, and then finally blows up a couple weeks later. And now that's the default standard. And yet when I suggest there was copying, I get lectured by my own fans. So when you look at that example, you look at inspired in April, interesting possible overlap from my August videos and her October videos, and then an hour later doing the exact same thing but without any of the originality. It starts to make you wonder, So interesting. And then another thing I hate is, and I've seen this with a lot of people, stand-up comedy gets less and less respect and more criticism. But it's also fucking the co-signer for entertainers. Like, Like, in other words, I was going to say, I think I may have said this on another episode, and maybe I didn't, or I've kept it in my tweet dress, but I was like, stand-up comedy is starting to feel like the black friend of the arts. In other words, nobody really wants to, you know, a lot of these progressives don't want to be near it, but they want to say they support it, and they use it like as a badge of authenticity when they uplift some open micer into something bigger. It's used as like a badge of authenticity, like grinding at stand-up comedy. Like, no. There's grinding at stand-up comedy, and there's being a light hobbyist of stand-up comedy. Progressives are the first ones to rain hell on stand-up comedy for violating their parameters of decency or acceptable art. But then at the same time, will use it as this badge of authenticity to uplift other comedic performers as if they have street cred. It's a street cred you don't respect and that you criticize, and yet you want to also hype up the fact that somebody has that street cred. And, you know, I have said this. This is a weird thing to say, but I have to say, if industry and agents can manufacture a comedy superstar out of very flimsy ingredients, it's a bad fucking omen for comedy. This is not personal, but for every Bo Burnham out there that was a genuine genius who happened to start on YouTube, there are a lot of people that get elevated in this game, and it only diminishes it, and it only limits the opportunity of the people who really have earned it and can really deliver. If you're a stand-up comedian, your first special should be a stand-up comedy special. And if it's not, you shouldn't be hailed as a stand-up comedian. That goes across the board for me. And what bothers me about this, and if it sound bitter or whatever, this is the shit I have been talking about on so many different levels for a decade, whether it's pay that middle acts get, whether it's streaming platforms kind of crushing the idea and the uniqueness of a special. I have been talking about this stuff for a decade, seeing problems in the business and giving it sort of a first person experience. Like I had what is it called? Stake in the game. I had whatever, some gambling reference, but I have, why can't I think of the phrase? I have a stake in this. I'm not an outside observer. I have a stake in this, and saying things can hurt my career. But what's the point? If I believe in stand-up comedy, I believe in its value. I believe in making it better as a business, as an art form. So if I don't say something, yes, a lot of people stay quiet. They'll say, well, you know, it sucks, but what are you going to do? I don't know. Speak up. Boycott. Headliners. Demand more money. Speak up when like stand-up comedy is being used as a fucking prop instead of like actual real stand-up comedians getting a shot and getting respected. I said, if this was happening to someone else, if I was looking at, there's a good example. There's a guy, Mike McRae, in, not that he wants to be dragged into this, great impressionist. I don't know his stand-up very well, but his Mitt Romney impression was just blew me away. And if I saw this happening to him, if Mitt Romney were our president and I saw him blowing up, I would be, and this isn't a call to arms for him, I don't think he even listens to this show, but if I saw this happening to him, I would be writing about it because I care, because I would be seeing a real stand-up comedian getting fucked over, and I'd be seeing like, what are we doing with stand-up comedy? Why are we elevating? Like, oh no, we have MSNBC picking our fucking comedy heroes now. It would be problematic for me, and I would say something, and I don't care if anybody, I'm not asking anybody to speak up for me. I'm just saying, if I'm the guy who would speak up for other people, then I'm going to fucking speak up for myself and say, what the fuck is going on? And between the criticisms I get online, the comedy ignorance, the people not getting jokes, the equating what I do to things that I don't think are even fucking in the same area code as what I do is really frustrating. And all I want to do is be a stand-up comedian. I'll take other opportunities, other monies, etc. But I'm ready, I'm here, and I'm ready to go. And I just feel like it does not get the respect it deserves. And I feel like I'm experiencing in real time my career constantly get to a level where in a different era where stand-up was king, or when stand-up got its proper respect, my career, multiple times over the course of my career would have blown up. But instead it became, first it was social media, now you got to have the social media numbers, then it became podcasting and this and that. But the idea that I would reach a new apex in my career and then have the powers that be and a wider, more bored audience decide that lip syncing, which you can find, like, would be king, is insane. It is insane. Like, some people will hear this as hating, but I am telling you, I did a bit 2 years ago on Thoughts and Prayers, which was basically a joke about how lip syncing would not be so heinous nowadays. Like, Milli Vanilli were ostracized for lip syncing. Now we give people specials for lip syncing. That's insane. Not even making it personal. I've already made it personal with sort of my questions about originality and borrowing or inspiration from different bits from different people. But on a bigger level, that's insane. I say this as somebody who cares about comedy and has spent almost my entire adult life in stand-up and making sketches and trying to pursue a career in comedy. That is insane. That is objectively insane that we would get to a point where in 2020, not only are we tolerant of lip syncing as like an art form, but we've now raised it to this is the preferred art form. That is fucking nuts. And I'll say it. And I know I am self-interested in this, so you can question my objectivity, but I assure you, anybody who's known how I've written and how I've approached comedy for the last decade plus knows that I would be saying this shit way louder and way more if it was happening to someone else instead of me. So I don't care. I'm doing my thing, but it bothered me because being first and being original for the second time this year did not benefit me. In fact, I got more heat for just stating that. And you know, if I lose this momentum or whatever, that's fine. I'll prove to people that I was a one-hit wonder, but all I need is that special, and those live gigs, and I can convert many Trump people, like the Trump fans, the fans of mine that like the Trump impression that are willing to step out and go to a comedy club. I will convert those people. They will become big fans of mine. And the people who just like the internet stuff and don't go to comedy clubs, or maybe a few of them will say, oh, but I really want to see JL because I've enjoyed it. I welcome them too, and I hope that I can convert them. But I know I will convert most of the people, and that's why I'm already putting out my stand-up stuff. I'm trying to just say fame doesn't mean. And somebody else said to me, like, oh, you're trying to get your Oh, that's what they said. It seems like he's just begun into full jealousy of her fame. And I said, no. Respect. And I don't want to sound like some fucking old-time mobster. Respect. That's what I want. The social media numbers, I don't need to have 3 million followers. I'm good with my Jehovah's Witness 144,000. So I don't need everybody to be a huge fan. I have enough of a platform now that I can get people and sell some tickets, I hope. And I know I have the material. I got a new hour ready to go. I need to work on it and then put it either on digital or on film. Well, I guess everything's digital, but you know what I mean. Either audio or visual. But when it's the disrespect. It's so weird. It's almost like people don't believe that people have integrity or something. It's like when you have integrity, people said to me, I've had friends say, yeah, he says he's going to quit doing Trump if Trump wins, but yeah, right. He's going to put that money. Yes. Yes. I've been a struggling artist for most of my career. So why wouldn't I give it up? It's not like the heat is not always going to be there for this anyway. But why would I continue to do something that I no longer enjoy, that I have the option? I have another job. So why would I keep doing Trump impressions if I thought he was a legitimate danger and that our country was descending into some sort of autocracy piece of shit country? I wouldn't, because I care. But a lot of people project their own like cynicism on me. But my career has been nothing but it has been mostly failure, but it has been all, I think, integrity. And I hang my hat on that. So if I never become the big time headliner, I'll say, you know, like Frank Sinatra, I did it my way. I didn't become fucking Frank Sinatra. I became a fucking failed comedian, but I did it my way. And at some point, when you've done it so long your way, violating the way you've done things is a worse loss than not becoming famous or rich. And for somebody to suggest that I'm jealous of fame, I'm jealous. I'm not jealous. I'm angry at the lack of respect. That's what I'm angry about. I could give a fuck about fame. And then my phone has to go off as usual. I guess that's the symbol that this episode has run its course. But it hasn't, folks. It hasn't. Get out there and vote. You got to get out there and vote, because I'm not afraid of burning in hell. I'm afraid of a second term for Donald Trump. But I think what we need, and then they don't even leave a message, spam call. I always want to say when I get a spam call, I just want to turn into Martin Lawrence from Martin. Why spam? Why? But instead of Pam. Anyway, two movies I saw this week, though. And we'll end on this. But yeah, once again, I know this is public, and I'm not looking for anybody to go on the attack or shit on anybody. But I know that tomorrow, when the special goes up, many people are going to be adding me with, like, it should be like trying to be supportive. And I appreciate it. But I really don't need to be added in that, because it just reminds me that comedy is in such a precarious place, and that my career, it just makes it feel worthless to have worked so hard to become such a good comedian and such a good impersonator, to have it be irrelevant to other parts of the industry, or as I should say, industry. But I don't need anybody to cape for me or to at anybody. But this is the truth. This is the record of, like, I have always done comedy a certain way. Win or lose, mostly lose. And I'm not going to stop that. And that's not what I care about. I've always said to people, I said, I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be famous. But if my talent ever gets recognized to the level I think it is, those things will probably come my way, because I think I'm that good. I think I've gotten that good at multiple things in comedy that once I get the opportunity, fame and money are probably going to happen with them. But maybe they won't happen. But I'm not looking for fame or money. If I could just pay every bill and be a touring comedian, I'd do that. But I know I'm good enough that it would be a lot bigger than that. So who knows? Maybe it'll never happen. But yeah, it's just, fuck it. Somebody's got to give a fuck. Like, here's a title. Let's make sure we remember this one, because we get fucking dementia during this. And if you want to hear me write something more feel good or more touching, the blog I wrote about Bob Gunton and my uncle will hit this spot for sure. But I feel like the Lorax of comedy. That's it. But instead, the trees aren't trees. They're good stand-up comedy bushes, and they're being burned. And I'm like, please don't eliminate all the stand-up comedy. It's sort of the most pure, honest form of comedy, even though sometimes a lot of it sucks and a lot of it is just masquerading as honesty when it's really just hate speech. We have to protect that, because, for God's sakes, if we're left without stand-up comedy and promoting real stand-up comedians and risk-takers and thoughtful humorists, we're going to be left with real garbage. And I've seen the future, and it is 500 million people shaking their tits and lip syncing on TikTok. So I have seen the future, and it is bleak. It is a dystopia of single moms in Florida singing songs and everybody copying four original ideas. It is a scary thing, and we can't go that way. Will you protect the bushes of comedy? But I saw two movies, guys. Let's end with some reviews, and then I'm going to go get some lunch and get back to work. Work, 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 work. I watched Borat 2, which I loved. And if you watch that movie closely, I'm not claiming anything, but you'll hear a lot of parallel thoughts between me and Borat in terms of some of the jokes. No lines like Saturday Night Live. Lines were not directly stolen from me. But that's one of those ones where I take it as a compliment. I go, yeah, I like the fact that me and Borat think the same. A girlfriend of mine a long time ago, when Borat, when Ali G was sort of big, but before Borat came out, was like, she was like, you remind me of that guy who does the characters. And I was like, who? And she was like, she thought I was like a Sacha Baron Cohen, like a beige Sacha Baron Cohen. And maybe it was just my humor genius that made her think that. Either way, that relationship ended. Although I did think of a joke about it. I think she told, she was a single mom, and I think she told her son that I died when we broke up because she was so upset. And I was thinking if I ever get like a Netflix special, my first line might be, might just be, I'm not going to use his real name, but Jason, that's not his name, trust me. Jason, if you're out there, I know it's been 16 years since you've seen me, but I am alive. I don't know. I think that would be fucking hysterical. anyway, Borat 2 was fucking awesome. The debutante ball. There's a lot of talk about other things, and I'm going to go on the record right now. You know I hate Trump, and I hate fucking Giuliani. I'm going to go on the record, though, and say Giuliani doesn't come off... Like, I know everybody was hyping it up. I don't think Giuliani comes off, like, bad, I think. First, I really did think he was fucking tucking in his shirt, and I have every reason to be like, you know, yeah, fuck him. He was fucking pulling his dick out. But he definitely looked like a fat old guy tucking in his shirt. And the reporter was flirting with him. And I'm not even saying, like, in other words, if he went into that bedroom and thought something was going to happen, I don't think he'd be insane for thinking that. She was doing a lot of unnecessary touching, and he was being, like, nice. It's weird because I think he's a scumbag and he sucks, okay? So don't at me on this one. But, Christ, watching it, I was like, okay, I don't, like, the movie was fine, and it's still funny. It's still a funny bit, but it's not, you know, I really didn't think it made Giuliani look like the perv that everybody was like shocked and saying he was. But it was awesome. The debutante ball scene for me was the highlight. I was so glad that that was not one of the like spoiled scenes or leaked scenes. The debutante ball was, the hardest I've laughed all year. So I was very pleased with Borat 2. I thought the ending was really funny. I think it was better than the first Borat. I would rank it ahead of the first Borat. My favorite is still Bruno. I don't know why that movie just... God, Bruno is just... I know everybody loves the first Borat and Borat 2. I think Borat 2 is better than Borat 1, but they're all awesome. Bruno's still my favorite of those three movies, though. And then I watched, because I'm reviewing these two movies as part of the Making Podcasts Great Again Patreon, as Trump, Rotten Oranges is the name of the monthly Patreon movie review show. So I'm going to review Borat 2 as Trump. And also, I watched Cuties on Netflix, which is this controversial French film. And let's be honest, I'm going to talk both sides here. It's a film. It's not child pornography. It's directed by a woman. I didn't like the movie. I didn't think it was a very good movie, but it's like, to me, I've been saying this to my girlfriend for a while. I said, the problem with American society also and sex and youth, I think, is that you'll have a show like fucking, oh, it's a high school show. Every actor is like a hot 26-year-old playing like a 15-year-old in high school. And that kind of warps you. I think as a society, you start thinking like high school kids are fucking jacked and have double D's and are sucking dick in the fucking Chuck E. Cheese parking lot. And it's like, that guy's 26 and she's 25 and did softcore porn. And now they're playing high school sophomores in like Parkersville, Iowa. And you're like, no, you'd be much more disturbed if you saw real 15-year-olds like making out and talking about sex. That would be realistic. But you'd be much more like, geez, this is pretty intense, isn't it? This isn't fun. This feels dirty and awkward. That's what our American television and movies would be if we actually cast real teenagers in the roles of teenagers. Instead, we cast like young adults or sometimes as old as like 25, 26. I feel like Tim Riggins, who an ex-girlfriend loved, the guy on Friday Night Lights, Taylor Kitsch, I think that dude was playing a sophomore when he was 25, like a high school sophomore. He was like 25. And it's like, that's weird. But Cuties is about 11-year-olds And it's uncomfortable, some of it. But having visited parks in the summertime in the Bronx, this is both a joke and true. I remember I was there with the aforementioned ex-girlfriend, one of the ex-girlfriends I mentioned on this episode, the one that was the single mom. I remember we were walking through a park with, it was the two of us and her son, and we were seeing like a family. It was like four sisters, or they might have been cousins or whatever, but they were all posing for photos, but they were all doing like, they were in two-piece bathing suits, and they were like, instead of like smiling and arm in arm, they all turned to the wall and like turned their heads around and stuck their asses out. And when I tell you the ages of these girls were probably 13, 11, 10, and 6, I'd say I was being completely accurate. And so for me to see a show like a movie like Cuties, where it's like a bunch of 11-year-olds dressed in like skirts and crop tops and like tight leather pants doing sexy dances, I was like, it's gross, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that young girls will be influenced and copy and try to get away with things they see on the internet in videos and whatnot. It's still jarring, and it's still not a good movie in my opinion. But the one thing that made me question it was, and first of all, I had dubbing on for the first half hour. I didn't realize that Netflix went to dubbing as the default. I was like, this dub makes me want to step away. Not afraid of burning in hell. That's a dubstep pun. But no, the dubbing was so bad. I was like, why does this young girl have the voice of a 23-year-old voice actor? It's like she's 11 and yet she's talking like, why don't we go here? Why don't we go to this store? And I'm like, I don't know about this 11-year-old, but this 23-year-old voice actor is definitely making me hard. not afraid of burning in hell. No, so I'm watching this, and somebody on Twitter was like, you can change it from dubbing to subtitles. I was like, yes, dubbing should never be allowed except for like campy kung fu movies. Dubbing is terrible. I don't know why anybody would watch. I guess if you don't want to read while watching a movie, but it's like dubbing is always awful in foreign films. And so I'm watching this movie, and then I switch to the subtitles, which definitely made a difference. And I get the message behind the movie, you know, and it was this like conflict between different generations. My joke is that Trump, if you're not a Patreon member, basically the girls were like two black girls, a Latin looking girl with big glasses, and a white girl, and a bigger Latin girl. But I joke that Trump's going to think it was like the coming of age story of the squad, like the little girl with the glasses is AOC, and then Ayanna Pressley, and the Muslim girl's Ilhan Omar. So it's going to be a fun time on the Patreon review of Cuties for sure. But yeah, it's didn't enjoy the movie. And the one thing I did find creepy, though, was, and thank God the director was a woman. And the thing is, France is in no position to be like, we are just making movies. Why do you question us? France, you're creepy when it comes to fucking kid fucking. You are like, you know, France is like one step behind the Vatican, like the Catholic Church, of which I am a member. I know, is like, kid fucking pretty bad. We should hide this. That's bad enough. France is more like, yes, with our kids, it is an intellectual tradition for us to mentor and make love to boys and girls. Like, there's some famous French author, like, on trial right now. He's, like, in his 80s, where they're like, norms have changed in France. And he's like, what, zut alors, what the fuck is this? You are telling me I cannot be with the kids anymore? This was total common practice. I'm really just doing, like, a gay Jean-Claude Van Damme. Is, you are telling me that I cannot do this? When I have their kids, I can do the split. I can't. So if I'm a naked and I do a split and a kid is underneath me, that is now illegal in France. That's a new character called confused pedophile Jean-Claude Van Damme, not afraid of burning in hell. Aren't you glad, folks, who stuck around after a 40-minute diatribe on the depths of despair I feel for stand-up comedy in my own career? But you stuck around for the money shot, which is Van Damme as a confused French pedophile. But Jean-Claude Van Damme, my first impression ever, sixth grade, when I started seeing action movies that were R movies. Van Damme was my first impression. we are going to show the people a lot of kick-ass action, okay? And so, yeah. So France is in no position to be like, what, us? What is wrong? This is just good French film. No. Because the director, thank God she's a woman, or else there's no way this movie would... Here's the thing. If you want to show kids imitating sexy dances, that's fine. Like, you can do that. That can be part of your film narrative. We made fun of it in Little Miss Sunshine because it was like she was chunky. Isn't Abigail Breslin, though, kind of good looking now? Like, am I allowed, like, I know she's an adult now, but I'm always like, Little Miss Sunshine got kind of nice looking. But you don't want to be like talking about Little Miss Sunshine, but now she's like in her fucking 20s, so I guess it's okay. But in Little Miss Sunshine, it was funny because she was like chubby and like awkward, and it's a hilarious final scene to that movie. But this movie is not playing it for laughs. It's more like social commentary. And I was like, if you want to show these kids being trying to be sexy, you can do that. That can be part of your film. But what's creepy about it is the director goes that one step further where it's like focusing on their butts and their midsections, like almost daring you to be into it. And I was like, this is gross. But it's a weird line that's either blurred or completely crossed. Because I'm like, if you just show these girls dancing on the stairs, biting their lips, trying to be sexy like girls in a video, you can do that. But I don't need the camera making love to these 11-year-old girls. And that's what, like, in one scene in particular where they're filming something for social media and they're, like, all taking their turns dancing on stairs, it was, like, kind of fucked up. I'm not saying it was, like, pedophilia or anything, but it was just, like, why? You can show them and let me know that what's going on, that they're trying to be sexy, but you don't actually have to film this. Like, in other words, they're not filming it like this. They're not fucking cinematographers. They're using a phone, just filming each other. But you, with your camera, are like, yes, glide over their midsections and focus on their booties as they twerk. And it was like, why? Why are you doing... Why did you make this cinematic choice? And I think it's because the French are like, we are just making provocative films. And it's like, no. No, like I said, the Vatican at least knew to hide it. Terrible. Awful. But they were like, yeah, this is not good. And the French go that one step further and go, why is this not good? I know norms are changing now in France. Norms are changing. But it is still weird that the New York Times is covering earlier this year, like the trial or the Me Too movement with some like 85-year-old famous French writer, philosopher, who it's like 9 of his victims have come forward. And France is finally deciding, hey, maybe fucking kids isn't okay. Follow-up story tomorrow. And of course, that's the country Roman Polanski ran to when he butt-raped a 13-year-old. He was like, I know where they'll keep me safe. Vive la France! So I don't recommend Cuties. That's my real take on it, though. So hopefully you'll hear Trump's take on it, which will be funnier. But yeah, I loved Borat 2. Must see, highly recommend. But Cuties, I was just like, eh. I wasn't digging it. On many levels, it wasn't that I thought this is like a film that cannot be made, but there were some choices by the director that I was like, yeah, why are you making love to them with the camera? Why can't you just show them trying to be sexy? Why do you have to actually film it as if, in a way that the kids could never film themselves because they don't have high-tech Netflix equipment to film seductive montages? So there's my take on Cuties, on Borat 2, and the pending destruction of all good things in comedy. So thank you for listening, guys. This I got this off my chest, so that was good. What a relief. And I don't know. That's just, I have to be honest about, I can't stop being honest about my comedy career. It got me this far, so I'm not going to stop now. And I know I got this far really by a global pandemic and blind luck, but I still have to be true to myself, I think. And that includes blocking fans, rejecting comparisons to art that I think is borrowed at best and stolen at worst. And I don't subscribe to the, you know, the masses who don't go to the comedy clubs. I will take the judgment of comedy club audiences 100 times out of 100 over people who just become social media fans. That's not to say you can't appreciate my work if you're not a comedy club goer. I don't mean to reject you. But once you step into my space, you're going to get my opinions and my feelings on comedy. You're not going to maybe get the Jimmy Fallon late night show guest where we just have a bunch of meaningless laughs. So on that horrible note for a very up and down podcast, I thank you for listening. Please, if you haven't, give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, also known for the hosting site formerly known as iTunes. And check out Making Podcasts Great Again, obviously. And if you haven't, check out some of my stand-up albums. They're really worth your time. And a lot of stuff going up this week. My endorsement speech as Trump of Joe Biden is a 17-minute masterpiece. I know that sounds stupid in the day of the internet, but it's too good. It's too awesome. So that goes up Tuesday. You can read that blog about my uncle and Bob Gunton, the warden from Shawshank right now, at jlcomedy.com, the blog. And I have a very, very, very special guest joining me for an interview for the Trump the Internet channel on Wednesday. That video should go up on Thursday. I don't want to jinx it. Very special guest. Don't guess. Don't at me with guesses. But let's just say it's somebody who was connected to the Trump administration. So that should be fun. Hopefully that comes through. I don't want to spoil who it is exactly. But yeah, so a lot of fun stuff. And then we have an election. So I hope you all, wherever you are, have voted or will vote for Joe Biden. I hope you will, if you're a third party person, I hope you can shake yourself out of that and do, third party didn't work in 2020. It didn't lead to some third party revolution. It didn't wake anybody up to some sort of third party need. All it did was empower a horrible, horrible human being who needs to be humiliated both in the Electoral College and popular vote. So I hope that people out there who are on the fence or standing on some sort of moral high ground that they disagree with the two parties. Donald Trump is, he's the worst, man. And Joe Biden may not be the best candidate, but I think Joe Biden's a good man and he'll try and he cares. And to me, being a good man with experience who will try is a lot better than being an abusive, horrible human being who neither cares nor tries. So vote for Joe Biden. Hope you enjoyed this episode. It was all over the place, but we ended with some strong laughs. I think my analysis of Cuties and my new character of confused pedophile Jean-Claude Van Damme is worth listening through 40 minutes of hardcore comedy talk. So thank you for listening. Have a great and safe week. And I will see you next Tuesday, Election Day. We'll see what happens.